Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of December 19th, 2016. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well. Very well. So, D.R., we have spent a fair amount of time agonizing over all of the damage that new president-elect, who I can barely say his name, the new president-elect, the kind of damage that he could do or would like to do, sort of like the evil genius tapping his tips of his fingers together, thinking of all the nasty stuff he can do. It is worthwhile to take a deep breath and say, what impediments, what structural impediments are there to the fossil fuel agenda that is being promulgated? And and I would say that we've gone on at some length in past shows about the anti-cabinet members that have been put in place, right? Scott Pruitt at EPA, who's dedicated to killing the Clean Power Plan, and whether or not Trump can faithfully execute the laws of the United States by doing such things. But I guess we should note that the ferocity of the fossil fuel push with all of these bozos that Mr. Trump is getting in place, the ferocity of that must mean that we climate hawks have them scared, scared their pants off, right? They wouldn't be coming at you with knives and forks and machine guns if they didn't know that you were onto something. Is that reasonable?
The analogy I use is you know, the old movies where you see the veteran robber trying to pull off one last heist, one last score, one last big take. And this seems to be the case. Bill McKibben, I think, was on WBUR recently. He basically made this point that the industry was beginning to recognize that the world was turning towards a post-carbon future. So they figured that they had to have one last grab for all the oil, all the coal, all the natural gas, all the money that they could have, you know, the over $1 trillion worth of assets. This was the last big grab of it before, you know, it becomes the end of the line for the industry writ large and the world begins turning towards a post-carbon future. So that's pretty much what's going on right now.
Well, so the question then comes as to what the Trumpet can actually do. So he's and it's so frustrating, right? He has this word salad where he says he has an open mind about the Paris Accord, but, you know, the scientists are telling lies, but, you know, he has an open mind. I mean, he like five contradictory things in one sentence, so it's meaningless. But if you want to hear the good thing, if you want to hear that he has an open mind, you can hear it. But he wants to get rid of the Paris Accord. He's promised coal miners thousands of new jobs. He's going to kill renewable energy subsidies, blah, 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 blah. It seems to me that those things aren't so easy to do. And let's just, if we begin with, say, general regulations of the EPA, right? So there's the Waters of the United States, which is, there's a new regulation about how the Clean Water Act works. There's the Clean Power Plan. Those things, by law, are based on scientific findings, right? And Trump cannot just come in and by fiat say, oh, forget all that. I'm president now. We're not going to do it anymore, right?
Exactly.
What is it? I mean, do you have any? It's my understanding that he has to provide, through Pruitt, superior science to disprove the existing regulations, right?
Yes, they would have to basically concoct something to justify not regulating this, because the in Massachusetts versus EPA, the Supreme Court said you have to regulate carbon as a pollutant. He would have to sort of come up with some sort of cockamamie way to say, no, we don't have to regulate that. And then it would end up being just a massive, massive legal mess that could be tied up in the courts for years and years and years. Remember getting to the point of Mass versus EPA, that took from – if you go all the way back, that took at least 8 years to get to that point. It was in 1999 when the first effort was made to try to have the EPA regulate CO2 as a pollutant. It didn't get all the way up to 2007, so this could take an enormously long time. And there's no guarantee that Pruitt will even be in there for that long of period of time.
Right. I mean, just as an example, you're right. If they want to kill the regulations, then somehow they have to go back and prove what was called the endangerment finding by the EPA, mm-hmm. where the science said that the carbon dioxide was a dangerous thing. They would have mm-hmm. to reverse that somehow. And so mm-hmm. that's just one example of the many things that are built into the law that make it harder for the Trumpians to do that. Now, of course, mm-hmm. it's easy to slow walk things, right? They mm-hmm. can go very slow and not do things, you know, not push anything. Right, mm-hmm. which is, I'm sure, what they would do in any event. But the mm-hmm. actual outright reversal will take some time, unless for some reason Trump is able to supersede the Constitution and, you know, start giving orders that people obey that are outside the Constitution. Mm-hmm. Then we're in a whole new, you know, a different universe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the other thing that Trump has promised, once or twice, I think I heard him say it, was that he was going to bring the coal jobs back and all mm-hmm. the coal miners were going to get jobs again, right? What's the reality behind that?
There have been a number of stories basically making the point that market forces have destroyed coal, most notably natural gas, which is very, very interesting because Trump's statements about bringing the coal jobs back is contradicted by who he has chosen, particularly as Secretary of State. Rex Tillerson is, you know, has invested heavily in natural gas, which has basically, you know, killed the coal industry. Mm-hmm. And you have to wonder what the coal executives and the coal miners who supported for Trump are wondering now that he seems to be embracing a guy who's killed their industry.
Well, it's a good point because even little boy Pruitt from Oklahoma, he's a fracking guy. He's not mm-hmm. a coal guy. So the mm-hmm. EPA is, you know, nobody. So the idea that somehow Mr. Trump is going to, you know, snap his tiny fingers and make the coal jobs come back, mm-hmm. it's not going to happen, right? Just the market forces are against that, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's that. Then there's the other thing is that in addition to coal being killed by natural gas, which of course is not that great in comparison, mm-hmm. but being killed by natural gas, is the fact that renewables are dropping steeply in price where they are competitive even with natural gas now, right?
Exactly. And there's also been a number of reports noting that if they try to strip away, you know, the credits for renewable energy, they may face resistance even among states where Trump won, because in those states, in those red states, there's a lot
of support. You mean like Iowa and Texas, right?
Exactly. There's a lot of support, particularly for wind. Mm-hmm. And it's been speculated that Trump might not want to screw around with that because that wind energy provides a lot of jobs. And you don't want to literally start going in and killing jobs in the name of trying to protect legacy energy, so to speak.
Right, and the point is that this stuff is competitive and taking off as a market force that is mm-hmm. beyond even the omnipotent powers of the orange-headed guy, right? Mm-hmm. That just, I mean, the market's bigger than the United States, and these forces are at play. Mm-hmm. And that is going to make it hard for the Trumpians to do much, they can do a lot, trust me, but I mean, this is a mm-hmm. countervailing force. The other thing is that makes it tough for poor little Donald to do anything about the Paris Accord. Okay, mm-hmm. so as we spoke naively before the election of how the any incoming president would not be able to pull out of the Paris Accord, basically, because there mm-hmm. was a 3-year notification period and then a 1-year wait. So that is to say, if on the day he is inaugurated, Mr. Trump decides to notify the Paris Accord that they're going to back out, mm-hmm. it would still take 3 years for that to even begin counting a clock, and then a clock would begin in the fourth year. So he would be out, presumably, by the time the actual withdrawal happened, right? And so that's built in.
And I think it was Senator Sheldon Whitehouse that made the point that there are any number of major companies that express support for the Paris Climate Agreement, and they may let President-elect Trump know that they would not support any effort on his part to abandon it.
Right. I mean, that's another point, is that companies, sort of global companies, want a constant market, right? They don't want the United States to be one market and the rest of the world to be a different market. So the companies are not going to be crazy about a patchwork of regulations. And in fact, even in the United States, different states will have different regulations, right? God knows, Massachusetts might have its own carbon tax, which would be a problem for companies that want to work here. But the other thing about the Paris Accord, I think, is that there is global muscle. I mean, I hope. What do I know? But I mean, I hope that there's global muscle behind the climate brief, right? People accept that climate change is real. And the real horrible thing is that China will take the lead. China will take over the United States role if we back out, and they will have all of the moral authority around the world to deal with this, and plus other issues, right?
Yes.
And I was going to say, as far as the Paris Accord, making it tough for these jokers in Washington to do anything, if they don't like the three-year clock that the Paris Agreement has, right? So Mr. Trump says, oh, look, I don't want to wait 3 years. I want to get out of the Paris Accord now. The incredibly destructive way they could do it is to pull out of the United Nations framework on climate change, which was signed, it was called the Rio Treaty, and that was signed in, I think, 1989, right?
So, and then I think 92, George H.W. Bush.
So this 1992 treaty, if the United States abrogates that and walks away from it, then then they're out of the Paris Accord by default. But that would have catastrophic impacts on general foreign policy. Right?
Oh, yes.
And Mr. Tillerson, then Mr. Exxon Tillerson would have to run around the world and make everyone happy because we just pulled out of this bedrock piece of international. Anyway, so.
And you do wonder what some of the members of the Bush family, who were fairly vocal in their criticism of Trump, would say with regard to that, because Bush 41's signature of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change is still to this day promoted as a refutation of the idea that the political right opposes any action to reduce carbon pollution. And obviously, and I assume that, you know, because it's so endlessly hyped up as an example of this, that the Bush family would not simply stay silent while Trump tore up the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change.
Oh my God. So I guess the other thing that is going to slow down the Trump's wish list is local action, right? The states have authority to do things on their own. So there'll be progress in different states. I think, you know, here in Massachusetts, we have the authority to push our Governor Baker, who, I don't know, maybe he's coming around a little bit, but push for climate action here. I read somewhere, so out in California, Governor Jerry Brown gave a speech to a bunch of scientists this past week, and when he heard that they were going to shut down NASA, tell me, DR, what did Jerry Brown tell the scientists?
He basically told the members of the American Geophysical Union that if Trump tries to get rid of a NASA satellites that measure climate impacts, California will, quote, launch its own damn satellite. We're going to collect that data, unquote. It was a fiery speech by Brown, who basically made the point that, you know, this is too important to California. This is too important to the residents of California to just simply abandon and go along with whatever the agenda is being promoted by President-elect Trump. And it sort of goes to the point of that resistance is the way to deal with this, not by trying to placate the guy, not by trying to appeal to a better angels that doesn't exist in his case, but to resist. It's been pointed out often that California may play the same role in opposition to Trump that Texas played in opposition to Obama, where they basically say, you know, hell no, we won't go along with your agenda.
Anything. There you go. Now, so there are reasons that Trump's dreams may be a little bit bumpy, right? Mm-hmm. And we have to make them as bumpy as possible. But there are local things happening, Dion. Let me just we may not have time to go through them all in detail, but I kind of wanted to list them up. Here in Massachusetts, Senator Warren sent a letter to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission insisting that they not let the West Roxbury pipeline go through. That's a mm-hmm. good step. There was a big protest in Weymouth where they want to put a compressor plant for some pipeline, right? Now, a mm-hmm. compressor plant takes the natural gas in. The natural gas is coming through the pipeline, compresses it till it becomes a liquid mm-hmm. with various nasty chemicals involved. And, you know, now you have this highly explosive, noisy thing in the middle of a community. The people in Weymouth don't want it, and they are pushing back fairly forcefully, right?
Such a nasty chemical.
The Boston City Council, God bless them, the Boston City Council has passed a rather aggressive natural gas leaks bill, where basically, mm-hmm. I guess, it's things like Eversource cannot get any digging permit unless they fix the leaks that are associated, you know, with that section that they're going to dig up, right? Mm-hmm. Other than an emergency, I guess they can do whatever they need to. But for non-emergency digging, they have to fix all the local leaks. They have to know about them. And it really mm-hmm. This is a big deal, because if you fixed all those leaks, you wouldn't need new pipelines pretty much.
Exactly. That was the point that Boston City Councilor Matt O'Malley made. And it was reported that this ordinance passed 12-1. It should have been 13-0. And considering the risk that you know the entire city of Boston is facing from all these gas leaks, I mean, it should be you know basically again a unanimous demand for these natural gas companies to fix the damn leaks, basically.
Yeah, I mean, and you're right. It cuts a bunch of ways. The leaks are dangerous to buildings in the city that just might blow up, mm-hmm. And they're a cost everybody money because it's just you know. Mm-hmm. Eversource doesn't want to pay to fix it, but they're willing to let you pay to let that pay for the gas that's leaking out, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's, mm-hmm. And of course, there's the climate implication. So again, there's three different sort of things coming together to push the city council to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. But then something very good also happened within the last 10 days or so off of Block Island, Massachusetts, the lovely vacation spot. No, Block Island, Rhode Island, not off Massachusetts, mm-hmm. Block Island. So what happened? Off of Block Island.
Yes, the launch of our first of the United States' first offshore wind farm, which I've said before and I've said again, should have been us. It should have been Cape Wind, yeah, but unfortunately, it wasn't because of a bunch of you know wealthy jackasses. Nevertheless, there was a great piece by Derek Jackson, the Boston Globe, about the launch of this new wind farm and showing what the real progress could be in terms of energy if the federal government Trump, you know, would bother to notice it. I think his closing line was "Turn, baby, turn," which is a nice line. And along the lines of wind energy, it was reported by the Boston Globe that Eversource that we mentioned, even though they won't fix the damn leaks, they're investing in a large offshore wind project 15 miles south of Martha's Vineyard. It's the Bay State Wind project that was set up by the Danish power company Dong Energy, according to the Boston Globe. And you'd figure that, you know, maybe Eversource and National Grid, maybe they would realize that would make more sense to sort of get their energy from wind than off, you know, dangerous fracked gas. Because I've never heard of a house blowing up due to a wind turbine, have you?
No. I mean, I think that these kinds of local actions, right, people in their states doing stuff in their community is a rise of the kind of humanity that will stop, oppose Trump's vision, right? Mm-hmm. You mentioned before there was an article or a speech from Peter Sinclair who basically made that kind of argument, right?
Yes, he had a great speech also at the American Geophysical Union, which he said, quote, "Now is the time for activists to envision and demand the highest goals possible for climate and renewable energy. The watchwords are local, vocal, and never back down," unquote. And he also basically made the point that, you know, 15 years ago, the fossil fuel industry would get hirelings like George W. Bush, Condoleezza Rice, and Dick Cheney to do their dirty work. Now they're doing their dirty work themselves, basically. And he also notes that, quote, if Congress is not willing to put a price on carbon, the people who understand science and love life will have to impose one of their own. The protesters at Standing Rock have shown the way. Look for that action to be a template for resistance to fossil fuel development in at every level, in every state, in every country. And in addition, we'll be creating new ways for local groups to advocate renewable energy development in their local areas, cities, and municipalities, unquote. So it basically echoes something that Tim DeChristopher noted, that the people have to be their own carbon tax in lieu of Congress doing it.
There you go, DR. Very inspiring. Well, we will put up links to as many of those topics as we can collect. They'll be on the blog. Is it massclimateaction.org/blog? Please go check them out. You can find the blog on the Facebook page at /massclimateaction. Please share us so other people can hear us. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio or Overcast or any one of a number of podcast providers. Of course, you can find us on iTunes. Just search for Massachusetts Climate Action. So we'll close where we always close, DR, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that Donald Trump's asinine policies not be taken as normal and that they be opposed, and that the United States put a price on carbon. So thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks. Remember, the future is green, not orange.
That's right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again real soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us, and until next time, be green.
Very cool.